Welcome to Keith and the Girl. I'm Keith Malley.
I'm Chemda.
I want to thank everybody who supported our marathon. It's coming up.
Thank you. We're going to be able to, so every year we have a marathon. Mm-hmm. We have like 50 to 100 comedic guests coming on. It's like constant. We don't turn anything off at any point. We hardly sleep if we sleep at all. But usually the kitchen is the green room. Mm-hmm. And everyone's stuffed in there. This year, and this is in part, this is a huge part to your donations, we have a separate apartment in the building that we're using as a green room.
Oh, very exciting.
That is a you know what? I just realized that I'm producing it, and that's why that's exciting for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if this is exciting for everybody else, but it's super exciting.
We could put some kind of stream going through there too, I bet.
Yeah.
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 So we appreciate it. That's something else for you to do, Hunter. Set up a stream.
You're like, now we need more money for streaming cameras.
The marathon, of course, is April 16th. My stand-up show is the day before April 15th. So you'll see all the information and some rewards are still up at keithandthegirl.com/marathon. I am indeed writing. I told you I was working on something about people meeting people. And it's going to change the way stand-up is viewed, I think, quite frankly. And I also have something now about stupid people having opinions. Because you go out there and you see these people and it's like, you're stupid, but you have an opinion. And I really delve into that. And I think you're going to enjoy that.
Very controversial. Edgy, I might add.
So get your ticket now. All
right? And your ticket also includes, I'm hosting. Mm-hmm. Andrea Allen is opening. A secret person is middling.
Mm-hmm.
After the taping, after Keith goes on, Bridget and the Squares are doing a short set. Then after that, live band karaoke. Mm-hmm. One ticket. This is insane.
So you'll see everything at the slash marathon and also slash tickets. Liz Mealy is our guest today. Hello, Liz.
Howdy.
Liz, of course, has been on Access TV's Gotham Comedy Live, Hulu's Coming to the Stage, co-produced and co-starred in 40 episodes of her web series, Apartment C3, and she has a new album out coming on March 28th entitled Mind Over Mealy, recorded in London.
Yeah.
Now, when you go over, now, luckily, they speak English, I heard.
Yeah.
So that's good.
Vaguely.
Is there a difference between comedy here and comedy in London?
You know, honestly, especially because like London feels very like New York City. It's like super diverse. You know what right. I mean? It's a transplant city. I don't know. There's little words, like there's little phrases and there's little words that I had to change. And I totally didn't think I changed that much in this. And I sent an early copy to a couple of people and they're like, you said lift so casually, like you said it your whole life. But like, there's just certain words. And I don't think I really needed to change lift, but like elevator to lift. But I did have
it's
to change.
It's pip-pip to be here.
Yeah. That's exactly. I had an umbrella everywhere I went. But like I had this thing where I was saying that like I went to public school as a way to kind of diminish my education, but it means something different in the UK. Public school actually means private school. Uh-huh. So I couldn't say public school or completely ruin the joke. So I had to say state school. And that was the equivalent to a public school. So
oh,
I don't
hear that means a university.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, or like yeah. College means high school for them, but college, like university is college for them. Oh. So college, I think they know what it means, but like I had difficulties with that joke before I changed it to state school. So I actually don't know, because this is like in the middle of me still figuring out how to do it well. But it is interesting, like what gets hard laughs there and the same act which gets hard laughs in the U.S. is a little bit different. So even like I have a joke where I say, you know, I went to Luxembourg, which I didn't even know existed until I got there.
Right.
Murders overseas, because they all think we're morons. Murders. Then you do it in the U.S., nobody knows that's a joke. Like, they're like, right. What's Luxembourg?
Oh, no.
So it just reinforces the fact that we're all idiots. Right. So that's always kind of fun. But that's like a throwaway line that gets like a hearty laugh overseas.
Wow. When I said it's going to be on presale, it's going to be at iTunes. Are you doing promotion for it now?
Yeah. So there's presale. The presale's happening right now. And I did something. I don't know if you've ever done this, but like I've had fans for a while, but I've only like... Let's put it this way. I knew up until maybe 3 years ago, I knew all my fans by first name and last name.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like it was like kind of like I have fans, and I met three people, and right. I could point them out in a lineup. But now I actually have like a hearty amount of fans. So what I did was for like the earlier fans, I reached out to about 10 of them and asked them, if I give you a free download, would you be willing to give me just a couple of like sentences as a like a what you think of it, just as right. like a thank you, but a B, like, here's people that actually like my comedy and what they think of it. Cause like any, but like I have a couple like bigger comics that do that for me, and I have now reviews from publications, but I thought it was like a nice
sure
thank you or whatever. So what I also did is I asked when they discovered me and how they discovered me, and almost I would say half of them discovered me because of you guys.
Wee.
Yeah. Aww. So I just posted one today, and it's this couple that comes to, I'm not even exaggerating, every single DC Virginia show that I do. Mike and Kira, they're probably listening. They're
hey,
the best.
Mike and Kira, you are the best.
So they, I call them like a power couple, because I'm like, I really. Because
they
like,
give you power.
No, but like that kind of, they go out together and they're always together and they're like really like in unison. I was just like, why can't I have that in my life? Like I was like.
You do, you have them.
Yeah. But they come to every show. So I asked.
It is funny the way a relationship should be. This is some yeah. kind of power couple.
but you know what I mean? But
they show up together, they leave together.
Yeah. I've never seen them argue, and they like me in unison. They're a power couple. Don't you take this away from me. I'm hoping they adopt me. But they're just awesome. So they come to every DC Virginia show. And so I posted one that Mike wrote about my set that was just really thoughtful and sweet. And they've been fans since they heard me the first time I was on, I think in like 2012.
Cool.
And then this guy, Dean from Australia. Dean from Australia, to the point where I think he has the last name, but he's always been.
Wait, that's from is not his middle name?
And like what's funny about him is I think he was originally a fan of Carmen's and then became a fan of mine and then became a fan of our roommate Chris when we did Apartment C3. So now he loves all of like Chris's fashion photography and videography and stuff like that.
But I just want to point out, are you seeing this? She's like, and then people came out to see me. This is what you guys going out to see comedy does. Hundreds of people in your audience, and you're like, oh my God, these people, they really care.
They do. No, dude, like I think I told you I had two Keith and the Girl fans that came to one of my previews in London. Not this one that became my album, but I did one a week later. And they were like, we heard you on Keith the Girl, da da da. I'm like, oh, I wish I had international texting. I would text him that. Like I actually think I've told you this. Almost every show I have at least two Keith and the Girl, and they're always a couple because I'm just like, everybody cuddles and listens to you guys.
I think it's actually in some cases, and I'm not kidding, in some cases one of the partners will be forced to listen because it's like every long drive, and then eventually we'll get this wonderful email that they go, and I've been forcing him to listen for this long, and now he's a fan, and we're coming out to see you guys. And I'm like, yes.
Only took 4 years. He actually kind of hates Keith, but I think I've really.
At first, they hated you.
Yeah. Right.
We tolerate you, and we would like to support you.
I do get a lot of those where, and I never, if you look at the forums, our forums, when I, you can like people's posts.
Right.
And sometimes people are like, Hamda, you were so funny, blah, blah, blah. I totally disagreed with Keith. And I'm like, well, I can't like this right now. I want to like this.
Separate them. And I'll pretend I didn't see the second one.
Right, right. Well, so I'll get emails like that where it's like, you know, at first I thought Keith was such a dick. And I'm like, I got to get around this when I write you back.
But he grew on you, right? So I can like this. But I've had that where like I either feature for somebody or somebody features for me, and they'd be like, I hated that other guy, but you were great. And first of all, standing right next to me, and he's my friend. So I'm just like, I appreciate your thoughts. And I hope you have a great, like, you can't be like, right?
Right. I'm back at you.
Yeah. It's like, it's one of those, like, you know, even if I don't like him, he is my coworker. Like, right.
That's the thing.
Could you not put us against each other?
Yeah, when you go to theater, when you go to stand-up, if you see people after the show, when you go, you were the best, you got to know that, like, most of the time we're working for free with our friends.
Yeah.
And so it's like, oh, I was the best. Didn't you like my husband?
Yeah, exactly.
I thought Keith was pretty funny.
But it does. It makes it, like, super awkward. You're just like, I actually don't feel like the winner in this situation, and now I have to fucking spend 20 minutes telling somebody they're great. Like, you've really ruined my night. I thought we were going to have a nice dinner.
I got to read my emails in the bathroom. You are celebrating 15 years of stand-up. Do you know that?
Yeah, I do know that. Am I celebrating? Is that the correct word?
So how old were you when you first started?
I started when I was 16. Yeah, just about. I mean, this hairstyle isn't changing anything.
16.
As a 16, yeah.
So quick math, you're 31.
Yeah.
Okay. So at 16, where do you perform at 16?
I did. So
my parents' living room.
Borderline. I did a mixture of open mics and bringer shows. Okay. And I remember I did a bringer show at the Cellar. That was my first show ever when I was 16.
They let you in there?
Yeah. So the rule is, I learned it very quickly, if they serve food, you can be under 21.
Oh, I see.
So I did the Cellar bringer show. That was my first show. I did a bunch of shows at Rose's Turn. It was like this really small bar in the West Village. Weirdest thing is I did, like, there was this, I think it's a full-blown strip club now, but it was in Gramercy. I cannot remember what it's called, but one half was a strip club, and then the other half they were trying to turn into a comedy club.
No!
So I was 16 years old, and, like, these strippers would come in and, like, get a drink and then, like, come out. And I remember I saw Lisa Lampanelli a ton before she blew up.
Stripping.
Yes. Because she was always there.
That's pretty much her set.
But, like, I got kicked out of that place a lot because I look 16 now, so I looked even more 16 when I was 16. So that was like, that was a place, but I did a mixture of bringer shows and like open mics all throughout the city.
The Comedy Cellar had a bringer show? There's they have that now.
Right? No, I don't think they have that now. But this was 15 years ago, and I think every club.
Wow.
And you know, it was early. It was probably at like 6:30. You know what I mean? Like on a Saturday.
Before they opened up the real doors.
Yeah. Before they let real people in. Dean Obidala, have you ever had him on the show?
Oh, yeah.
Dean was my host. He always brings that up.
Yeah. That he created you?
Yes, he did create me. But I did Julia Rozzi's first sets show, and so they take, so I have video of my first set, and I haven't, it's a VHS, so it's like in a time capsule. I can't crack. So I gave it to her, and she showed parts of it, and it, you know, you see Dean introduce me, and you just see me being like, so I'm short. You know what I mean? Like these horrible jokes.
Do you remember one of the jokes that you were like, oh, why did I think that worked? Or,
oh, no, I didn't. First of all,
first of all, guys will fuck me without eye extensions, okay? These eyelash extensions are ridiculous.
I was very confident. It was what Julia said that I wouldn't have picked up on, especially because we didn't watch the whole thing. But she's like, actually, because you do a regular set and then they show, I hit the same themes. So it's about like my parents being crazy, me going to therapy, me being like weird. And I mean, you put both my albums next to this, it's the same topics. It's just slightly funnier. All right.
That's good again, right? You stayed on brand.
There's on brand and slight growth.
In 2008, there was an article in the New York Times that included you.
Okay.
And it said Liz Mealy, who is now 23, was 15 when she wrote to 45 comics seeking advice. Two responded.
Did you write the same letter to everybody?
Just about. I mean, I changed what I liked about them. I was very specific.
You're my favorite. Judd Apatow urged her to study English. So is that how bad this letter was?
Probably. Yeah, I am dyslexic. I'm sure it was pretty rough.
Learn grammar and then...
And get back to me.
Was this handwritten?
So this is... I was a huge fan of Freaks and Geeks, and I think Undeclared was on TV.
Okay.
And this was way... This was before 40-Year-Old Virgin. So this is like... You could go on his website and get his email. So I sent him an email, and he sent me an email the next day.
Oh, okay.
That's where he wasn't. He's not the Judd Apatow we think of today.
That's cool, though.
Yeah.
George Carlin called.
Yeah.
Was there a picture with this letter?
I don't know. That's not nice.
I'm just asking. Was there?
No. Why would I send a picture?
I don't know.
That's so weird.
Well, a videotape?
No, what I did is almost like, you know, those like write to celebrity websites.
Okay.
Because I was trying to find, like, I had a range of people. Like, I had, you know, Wanda Sykes before she was huge. I'm pretty sure I did write to Bill Cosby.
Right.
But it was everyone from, like, you know, Eddie Murphy to, you know, probably, I definitely wrote to Jim Gaffigan, definitely wrote to Greg Giraldo. Like, it was everybody that, you know, I watched on Comedy Central and I just loved what they did. I wrote to Kathleen Madigan to... you know, George Carlin. Like, right. I just, and it was, you would get websites and you would go to these websites and it would be like, the stars live here and write them. So most people are just asking for autographs, but I was like, hey, I'm thinking about doing stand up. I'm a huge fan. You know, do you have any advice? And it's funny, a couple of them, like Janine Garofalo sent me a headshot and so did.
My advice is hang this in your wall.
But it was like, you could tell they didn't read the letter.
Right.
Yeah, like I figured that's her people sending that.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, but that's the thing about George Carlin. He doesn't have people. Just like they say Bill Murray doesn't have an agent. He just has an answering machine. And then he listens and he decides if he wants to do a part. George Carlin had an office that he would go to every day and write. And so that was his office letter or his office address. I don't know how, again, I don't know how I found it. I just kind of looked. And so I wrote him a letter that he read, or
this
somebody
was
read.
Handwritten.
No, I typed it like a business letter because that's how my dad taught me. So my dad taught me you don't know how people want to respond to you. Right. So because I had a physical address, I wrote my address, then I wrote my email, and then I wrote my phone number.
And then wrote, will you help? Yes, no, two boxes.
And then a self-addressed stamped envelope.
Right. Yeah.
No
but,
effort.
But they kind of teach you that. If you're going to ask for a favor, make it as easy as possible for somebody to give you a favor. And so I'm assuming he thought, I'll talk to her for 10 minutes and tell her don't do it.
Carlin told her to keep writing always. 4 years later, they met for a soda in the lobby of the car lot.
Who paid?
Yeah, of course.
Well, so when he called you, did you believe that that's who was on the phone, or did it take you a minute?
I'm not exaggerating. Mental illness runs pretty badly in both. I'm one of five kids. It is very rare that you're home by yourself. And I was folding clothes, watching a Sandra Bullock movie, and I picked up the phone. And when he asked for me and I heard his voice, I like a movie slid down the wall and was like kind of not hyperventilating, but a little bit like, is it? What? But I did write the letter, and it was 2 weeks later. Like everything kind of added up. But then it was like after it happened, there
did
was
you tell anybody that you wrote that letter?
My dad knew because my dad recommended it.
Okay, so your dad wouldn't be the one like, hey, yeah, I'm totally George.
No.
I'm up, down, down, low, up top, over there, over here. Where am I at? I'm George.
Well, this is the funny thing. My dad didn't like him because he was crude. Mm. So when my dad, when he like called me, and then he, like, I had follow up letters that I sent him asking for advice. And then when he gave me free tickets to a show, I had lunch with him. I was like, when I was in the New Yorker, I talked about him and I sent him a copy of that, and he called to say he really enjoyed it. And then he died 2 days after my Live at Gotham on Comedy Central aired. And he like wrote me an email.
You really killed.
Yeah, I did. Yeah. I did, guys.
Thank you.
But he wrote me an email to say that he was going to watch it, kind of thing. And then but he didn't tell me he was like in the hospital. Like, you know what I mean? Like we're besties.
Now, is he this sweet? Was he kind of lonely? Not to take anything away, but.
I honestly, from everybody I talked to, he has just always genuinely been a really kind person. So like I read DMC from Run DMC. He came out with a book called 10 Ways Not to Commit Suicide, and it was about how he was an alcoholic and suicidal during like the heydays of Run DMC. Mm-hmm. And I went to a
what's a shame. It's such a shame when you find out that like they had to have enjoyed it on some level, but all our quote heroes were going through such trauma while they were like at the top of their game.
Literally at the top of his game, he was suicidal and didn't want to live. And so he wrote this book, and I saw him speak, and it was for the Jed Foundation, which is like a suicide prevention mental illness foundation. So it was like, I didn't realize how small this thing that I got invited to was. It was like 20 people. So I met with him and I talked to him afterwards, and we were like talking about hip hop, like Kid Cudi and his depression, and then talking about Chappelle and stuff like that. And you know, like posted a picture, and then everybody was like, he's the nicest. And then I did like a John Fugelsang Serious show.
All these people were saying Carlin is the nicest.
No, they were saying Run DMC, DMC from Run DMC was the kindest person, but they're saying from the 80s to today, he's always been the kindest person, no matter what state of his mind was. And that's how George Carlin has, like, so, you know, I met him in his 70s, you know what I mean?
Right.
So here's somebody that you think, well, you know, whatever, but everybody I've ever talked to that's ever worked with him ever has said the same story. Like even like when we were in the lobby and he was kind of showing me stuff on his computer and giving me all this advice, some dancers from Madonna like were staying in the hotel and they recognized him, and they were saying like they were inviting him to the show, like, hey, Madonna wants to know if you want to come to the show. Like that's literally happening, and I'm like 19 years old, and he's like, oh, thanks so much, I have a show in Connecticut, da 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 da. But like, it's just the way people, you can see how they like give them full eye contact. You go, hey, this is Liz. Oh, Liz is like this very play. And then even he didn't have something memorized and he needed it printed, and that lobby couldn't print it. So they were going to like a sister hotel in Times Square to ask if they could print it. And he asked for the names of the people in this lobby and the people in the other lobby so that he could write a thank you note. Like, I don't know if it's because he was like raised in like the 40s or whatever, but like he was just.
But he didn't do everything that he was raised on. Do you know what I mean? So it was. To me, a person like that, that's a choice to keep. If he did learn it as a child, he didn't just run with the stuff that he learned as a child.
Yeah.
He either developed it or decided what from his childhood he's going to keep.
Absolutely. And I think you deduce that all the time. And like, who's going to get it? Because, you know, I think I try to be polite to everyone, even if they are a shithead. But like, there's a lot of stuff my parents did exceptionally well. And there's a lot of stuff that therapy is trying to rewrite. You know what I mean?
How's that going?
It has its moments. You know what I mean? So to me, I mean, I do get like with that whole like Bill Cosby and da da da, and you were a young girl. Like, there's other young comics that he wrote to that he was just as helpful with. But I get a little bit like, don't tarnish that, not only for me, but for who he is, because he has always completely been a genuine person that I've experienced and anybody else has experienced. And right. There really was nothing I could do to help him. He would send me signed books. Like, he was just incredibly encouraging before I even did stand up, and then while I was in that process. And it was...
Did he see you perform?
He never saw me like live. I feel like I sent him a clip of something. But most of it was kind of written stuff. And then, like I said, he was going to see my live at Gotham. And I don't know if he ever did.
How would he greet you or say goodbye? Because you're 19, you're hungry, obviously. And I'm not saying he was out of line, but I wonder if he would feel weird. Like, I don't know. Do I kiss you on the cheek? Do I shake a hand? Because I think I would write a note that says, nice to meet you, hand it to you, and then we get to work.
I mean, she's not 12, though, also. She is 19.
I don't remember. I'm assuming we shook hands. I brought my dad's like nice camera to ask if I could get a picture. So like, I have a nice picture of us. I mean, it's funny because like after that initial phone call, what he did, like talk about writing a thank you note. What he did unprompted was sent me a signed headshot that said, "Hey Liz, go do it, George Carlin."
Right.
Like.
And then he sent your dad one that says, get off my ass.
And you've had the disease ever since.
But as somebody, like, my dad's really thoughtful. And I have to tone back my thoughtfulness because it comes across as creepy and aggressive. So, like, even that, like, I appreciated it at 15. But even now, like, I have young comics reach out to me. And I go, okay, how was I treated? And how, it's like, it has had more influence on me as a person than as a comic, the way he treated me.
So there are two ways that I think people can go about asking a comic or anybody in their field about stuff. And we've definitely got a couple emails, you know, about like how to start a podcast. And tell me if you get this and if you respond to this, okay? I want to start a podcast. Any advice? And I'm like, for real?
Yeah.
So just...
Now right. It's my job.
Yeah. So and it's like, you podcast and go. Right. I'm like, oh yeah, I have some time. And or, you know, that letter that you sent, like, this is what I'm thinking, you know.
Yeah.
So do you also write back?
Well, you guys are super fortunate because you came out with a book. You could be like, yeah, I put it all in a book. It's $10.99 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like,
do you know why we wrote that book?
Because of those emails?
Yes.
No, but I mean, I should
because
at this point.
It's not because we're charging people for the information. No, because sometimes friends are asking me and I go, well, here's what I can tell you. It's like a base.
It's time consuming.
It's like, oh, you had this thought of podcasting. I go, just check this out. Here's a code and you can download it for free. If you start there and then come back with like really stupid questions, that's not fair to me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Well, what I do a lot of times, so I do two things. If I think the person's really serious, which usually that doesn't sound like a serious email to me. A serious email to me is like, hey, I've seen you here. You've done this. I like this. This is what I've been thinking. This is what I've been trying. Da, da, da. I'm really grappling with blah, 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 blah.
Ooh, that sounds like a very long email. But let's meet in the middle, people. I'm just putting it out there.
No, but at least that person sounds like they thought about it. This guy is like, hey, I heard you just need a microphone and people pay money. Like, to me, that seems like somebody that's trying, but somebody that's like really confused and really passionate and they have specific questions, I do one of two things. If it's one question, I'll just write it out. I'll just be like, do, 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 do. And sometimes, a lot of times what I do is like, I'm super busy. I'll get back to you in a week if I don't remind me. But if it's a bunch of questions, I've done this for maybe about five comics. I go, hey, how about we do this? I'll give you an hour of my time. We'll Skype. You can ask me any questions you want and I'll help you. And that's usually for somebody that sounds really serious. Either they've already started or they're really like, there's something specific about their email that makes me feel like they really want to do this. And so I'll give them an hour of my time and let them shoot as many questions as possible.
That's really nice too, because you're overscheduled. Like, you are way overscheduled.
I've gotten, it sounds weird, but almost the same way podcasting has kind of like, you think out ideas and you come to stuff that you haven't really fully thought about in a really long time, and it becomes like rereading an old book, and you're like, oh yeah, I remember I should do that. So even telling somebody, well, like I do this, or I start to really understand my process in a way that I've never really understood, because they'll ask me a question I don't ask myself, but I clearly know how to do it.
Well, I've been, Liz is very generous. I've been forwarding emails to me, to her. let me mention this, by the way. It's an app that I think you should use to download your podcast. And we work with these people, and it's called Laughable. And what I like about it is that you'll be able to, you go on there now, let's say. You're on the Laughable app, and you see me under comedians. You can click on me, or you can search for me, and then you'll see all the other podcasts that I was on.
Like you know that he's on Keith and the Girl every day. But when you go under his profile, you'll see he was on Hot Mess.
Right. You can see that I just did one called Medium Popcorn, where we talked about the movie Logan. And I was the only person that despised it, and everybody loved it. So it was a good dynamic. But yeah, there's how would you follow somebody on all these different shows? And that's what I like the app. And like I said, we are working with them, Ari Shaffir, Robert Kelly, you know, a group of comedians to make sure that everything's working smoothly.
And you know, one of the, it's interesting. Okay, so we were considering working with Laughable. And to me, it's like, well, what's the, why? Why would we do that? But the guy that we met with, his name is Ned. You know when somebody like knows your industry and is not just like hasn't just memorized stuff and like understands that this has to work a specific way in order for comedy fans to even give a shit, in order for podcast fans to get what they're looking for. So we like the way it's set up, and you can discover a lot of things, a lot of shows, a lot of episodes that we've been on that you don't even know about. I was recently on Judy Gold's podcast. I feel like it kind of just, you know, fell by the wayside because of like
the mix.
Just all the episodes that we put out, maybe. So find me on Laughable.
You can go to laughable.com. That's where the iPhone users can download it. Android's coming soon, so you can sign up, you know, give them your email, and they'll let you know when that's coming out. And that's it.
And actually, one main thing is if you do follow our show there, and if you do listen to our show through that, they're able to tell us where you're listening from, and that's how we'll know where to do live shows and things like that.
Right. Speaking of movies, by the way, I saw an ad for the new movie Chips, based on the old TV show, California Highway Patrol.
Yeah, no, dude, I was in LA for 3 weeks, and it's the advertisements are everywhere and huge.
So I see this poster.
I never knew that standard for California Highway Patrol.
It would be CH&P were capitalized. The INS isn't. In this movie remake, they don't bother with that. And I don't like that.
I didn't know that too.
So it's one of these things, you know, and it's going to be.
I never even thought, why do they call it Chips? Because I never cared. It sounded terrible.
Dax Shepard and Michael Pena. And you know, it's going to be a silly comedy. It's really just name recognition, right? With the title. And on the poster, it says real big under Chips, Chip Happens. I will not see it though.
No.
There's no good movie with the tagline Chip Happens. It's not, like, it's not even Alvin and the Chipmunks, and it's a wink to the parents.
Yeah.
It's a wink to what you're about to see.
Yeah, Chip did happen for $16.
It's also,
Chip you.
It's also nothing, they said nothing.
Right.
Like, the tagline actually is supposed to say something.
Right. And it's not even
that we're kind of going to swear.
Right.
Yeah.
Like, it's not even like,
aren't we cute? Aren't we cute? We're so cute.
Wait until what we do for an hour and a half if this is what we do on the poster.
I love that this is how we're watching or not watching movies.
Yeah.
You fucked up.
Well, I do think we have such little, there's podcasts, there's movies, there's YouTube videos. There's so much that you do have to like kind of narrow it down. So I do like the idea that like, no, I'm out. Like any little thing, you're like, nope. It's almost like how dating works, where you're like, nope. It's just like there's too many options. So you're just like, don't piss me off even the slightest.
He's the Seinfeld of movies now.
Right.
She chews one pee at a time.
No, I wrote them a letter. I said, thank you.
Yeah. No, because they just saved you an hour and a half.
Yeah, I'm free.
I'm like, a potential 2 hours in case they thought their stuff was so good. In case they thought their chip was so good.
Yeah. I'm sure they're putting something after the credits that is really worth my time.
That's when Chip really happens.
Right. And by the
way, I'm adopting this now.
Yeah. It's actually how you're going to piss him off. You'd be like,
fuck Chip, yeah. Chip, yeah.
Speaking of dating, there's a dude that made it's somehow news. You know, you see these things, you're like, how is it news? He's a serial dine and dasher, and people will find him on Bumble or these kinds of apps, and he would go and skip out on the check.
to pre-know that you're doing that?
And he knows what, yeah, he knows he's going for the meal. Sometimes guys think the women know, they're just going for the meal. And he's like, well, I'm going for the meal.
So he's doing this on dates?
He's doing it on dates.
Oh, okay. So he gets them to go on the date. He gets on the date. They go somewhere nice. Yeah. And then he's like, I have to go to the bathroom.
Yeah, exactly.
And then he leaves.
He leaves them there? Yeah.
Several women in the LA area. Because he probably tried it first in his defense. Going, I don't have my wallet. What do we do?
Yeah.
You know? And she's like,
you can Venmo me.
Yeah. You'll figure it out.
I'll drive you home. We'll get your wallet.
Several women in the LA area say that he ditched them at the table, claiming that he had to make a call.
Yeah, see, I know his moves.
He either goes by the name Paul or Dave Gonzalez. A glass of Pinot, this woman says, a Caesar salad with a side of shrimp, a steak, and a baked potato.
That's what he ordered?
Once he had devoured most of the meal, she said he left maybe half a baked potato and then received a phone call and said, I need to take this call. And then this happened. The waiter came back and said, he's not out there. Is this a first date? And I said, yes, this is a first blind date. And he said, oh, well, he's gone.
Oh, God.
What?
On another date that took place more than a year ago, Gonzalez said he was a bodybuilder and ordered two entrees for a total of $100, leaving his date stranded with the bill. He says, I'm going to the bathroom. I'll be right back. And he never did. One of the dupe dates was comped Gonzalez's meal after he dashed, but she still had to pay for his wine. LA District Attorney's Office.
That is actually really nice.
The district attorney's office says that the 44-year-old is currently has two bench warrants out for his arrest, so this is illegal.
You think?
I've been with women at the end of the meal. Some of that should have been illegal. Oh, my. Looking in your purse, pulling out another purse. It's a Russian purse, and there's no money at the end of it. Purse. Get the fuck out of town.
You know what? I didn't think of this, that it could be not illegal because the other person is there. Like, if me and Hennessy eat, and he leaves, it's not like we committed any crime yet.
Imagine it's a horrible.
If I leave, it's a crime.
It's a horrible date, and the woman thinks the guy's just going to pay, but you only pay your half, and you go, well, arrest her. I don't know why she thinks I was going to pay. Arrest her.
Right. That's the thing. Yeah. So,
I mean, in some ways, I feel like he's doing something political. I'm sure he's just a douchebag.
Right. Right.
But, like, you know what I mean? Which is, like, why is the assumption that I'm gonna pay? I wonder if it was just like
terrible.
Oh, I do. I don't agree with anything that he's doing, but a part of me is like, I don't assume anybody's gonna pay on the first date. I order what I can. I mean, it's bullshit that, you know.
No, it'd be one thing if he was dining, paying half, and dashing.
Oh, I agree.
That'd be right. One. Like that's a decent protest.
But in some ways, he's saying, I've paid for so many meals, now women are going to start paying for some of my meals.
Maybe it's a villain origin story.
That's what I'm saying. Like, I'm saying, like, maybe one glass of Chardonnay too many, a girl right. didn't,
oh,
you
yeah.
know.
He's paying it forward now?
Yeah. No, he's, like, he is the Batman of bad dates. Like, where's his, yeah, I want to know his origin story. Who hurt him?
And then you break these women down, and they're like, he did pay half. I didn't say.
Yeah. Or like you start to look, they all look the same, and then you find mm-hmm. that one bad date, and they're right. he's just recreating the scenario over and over again. Now you pay, bitch. Now you pay.
I have a phone call. I'm gonna take this food outside with me and answer the phone.
Yeah.
A man identified as Joji in Japan was found dead in his flat. You know that as an apartment. By a cleaner. He's 50 years old. He had such a huge porn collection that it weighed in at 6 tons and fell on top of him.
That's
how he died?
He was only discovered when his landlord went to the flat over unpaid rent. They're not clear whether he died and fell into the magazines or if he was crushed by the magazines. 6 tons. Now, I don't know what a ton is in Japan, but I bet it's still a lot.
It's a 12,000 pounds.
You know the internet exists, right?
But also, 12,000 pounds. That's that. How big is this place?
You know, a part of me is like, is this up for rent? Like,
I like flats.
And did they clean the jizz off? Like, I'm ready.
I wonder, as he's dying, he's like, fuck, I'm dying. I mean, what am I going to do? I'm going to die.
Is there, I imagine every magazine he read once and jizzed into once and then puts him on the left pile, you know?
But you know, like, what is it like when people buy other people's estates? Like, you, not estates, but like, you know.
Estate sale?
Yeah, like.
They go into the apartment and go, I'll take that.
Yeah. Like, I'll take his dresser and I'll take all his jizz mags. Like, I wonder, like, maybe they're really like. unique. Like, I don't know. I'm giving this guy a lot of... I feel really positive today. I feel like I'm really helping a lot of people. Where I'm just like, maybe that guy was fucked over and he's a vigilante. Maybe he's trying to help people with like unique porn options.
You're right. All these guys need more excuses in their lives.
Yeah. I'm just like, all men's lives matter. Why is nobody...
You've seen like a stack of magazines or newspapers slowly fall off the table, but you can't get to it.
Yeah.
Picture this falling on top of me.
Oh, God.
And as it's falling, slowly... No. It's up to his waist. It's up to his arms. He's dead.
Oh, you're kidding me.
His poor boner can't actually get it off.
I like how Keith actually used his papers in real time, and now he's reorganizing it because he's so committed to the bit.
Okay, so you met Carlin and then he kissed you, or...
Right. Our guest is, damn it.
The man's body was only discovered 6 months later.
Ooh, 6 months later?
When the landlord entered
that's a really good landlord. Yeah, he waited. Yeah,
he waited. He's like, 6 months is enough. I have to come in.
You know what else is good? The amount of magazines that are put over him, because a dead body starts reeking so quickly. Mm-hmm. He had so many magazines on top of him, the building didn't reek after 6 months.
Wow, that's a good
point. I like how we're taking that as fact. I'm like, fact, you're just saying, magazines.
If you kill a body, just get some newspaper and some magazine. Preferably jizz, because it kind of helps keep it something.
All the jizz.
The man's lowly death was revealed by a member of the cleaning team who said his company had been hired to remove the magazines discreetly in a way that would not be noticed by neighbors and the man's family to save them from the shame.
That's nice.
But we at the Daily Mail found out, so fuck him.
Oh. Other things. Here's his picture. Here are his kids. Right.
Other non-physical crimes that we found out about that hurt nobody. It was unclear if he had suffered a heart attack and fallen into the stacks of magazines. Now we're just adding words because that wasn't a long article at all. The cleaner said that it was that if he was still conscious, the paper would probably have muffled his cries. The cleaner is also apparently a forensics expert. Every space in the flat was filled with piles of magazines. There were also clippings from erotic magazines. I used to do that as a kid. I would tear it out because magazines took up space and I was trying to hide them from my parents.
Yeah.
I was like, you took out the words? What? For inspiration? Which one?
It just says jizz everywhere. naked ladies, boobs, jizz.
Turn the page and I'm like, I don't want that.
Actually never said jizz so much in my life, by the way. Really enjoying this freedom.
There were also clippings from erotic magazines where it appeared the man was cutting out his favorite articles. No, I did pictures. I'm not a freak. And throwing away the rest of the magazine. So he was trying.
Which is weird because at first I was starting to think maybe he was like a hoarder and his thing was, you know, like erotic magazines. But now he has a lovely collection.
He's a researcher.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah.
He probably has all the actual porn info we need. Mm-hmm. He did all the research.
6 metric tons, 13,228 pounds.
How does that not affect the apartment itself? Because it was an apartment, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's kind of, like, a part of me is just like, you know, this guy's just like, is this guy getting fatter? Yeah. Like, there's just like some...
I swear they're bowling upstairs or something.
Yeah,
13,000 pounds.
That's a dent, man. That's like creaky, like...
Did you hear anything from the neighbor upstairs? 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Felt like a 5, 6, 7 tons made that big.
Yeah, we're like, is that an elephant? And it turns out it was an elephant amount of porn.
You interview his neighbors and they're like, so quiet, you can't even hear a page turn.
Yeah.
Well, that's why people work on their material.
George
told me that day one.
Yeah, we're going to do this again. We'll practice in the green room.
Okay. He had 12. That's so... Yeah, you're right. I need to work on it.
No, it's okay. I'll guide you. I got you. Just write me an email.
Make sure I include what I like about you.
Oh, absolutely. If you're not going to compliment me, you can go fuck yourself.
Comic Artie Lang was busted for drug possession near his New Jersey home. He's 49 years old, if you're curious. He was arrested in the parking garage of his building at 14th Street and Shipyard Lane in Hoboken.
Oh, no. This is sad news because he has, like, major... problems with major, like, heavy.
I have a drug question when you're done.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
How do you get arrested for drug possession in your own home?
Well, you got to buy it somewhere. So he bought it.
Oh, so you think they, like, he bought it and they followed him?
The Hoboken cops, he says, treated me so great people, professional. I thank them I thank them for that. Now a lawyer tells me what to do. Meanwhile, Kemda was overnight for turnstiles. A neighbor called police to the garage over fears that someone was trying to break into the car. Cops found Lang in the lot, searched him, revealing several bags of heroin, cocaine, and drug paraphernalia. In 2009, he was arrested for driving under the influence after he crashed his car into another vehicle in Toms River. He pleaded guilty and later said he had been taking prescription pills. You know those pills. Sometimes you take half and half a glass of wine and it throws you into a tizzy. Ugh,
I don't know if everyone's expecting this, but obviously, what are you doing arresting people for their heroin addiction? Yeah. I don't understand what this is going to do for a clear addict who is struggling with drugs.
I'm like so obsessed with all the like Norway and Netherlands and how we treat inmates and how we treat, you know, drug addiction, like everything everything in Scandinavia, except for the fact that they don't believe in black people, I think they're doing great. Like, I really do. Like,
that's the only thing we have in common.
Yeah. But it's like, you look at all this stuff, and it's just like the way they discipline kids is meditation instead of detention. You know, what they do with inmates is rehabilitation rather than punishment. What they do with addicts is, again, rehabilitation instead of punishment. Like, the fact that we punish people for addiction, that... You know what I mean? Like, he wasn't selling it. He was doing it. So you're right there. It's not about hurting other people. It's about hurting himself. So let's, like, any, like, I feel like if you're 14 and over, you understand why he's doing heroin. So
you
like,
you can kill yourself over booze. There are people drinking their faces off.
Nobody stops them.
We understand alcoholism somehow, but not, and we don't even fully understand that as a people, but we don't understand heroin addiction as if it's different. Don't you know heroin's going to kill you? Literally, alcohol can kill you. That could be on your death certificate. Died of alcoholism.
They're just patient. That's the only difference.
And you're right. The way I know, I was in school and I would get detention for falling asleep in history class.
How's that helping?
It helps nobody. The teacher takes a ruler, slams the table, and I want to say, wait a minute. How come you're not embarrassed?
Yeah, because you're boring as shit.
Right.
So now I've missed this lesson and I'm going to miss new lessons. Right. Like, I don't know. Why don't you get like a good guest in your teaching room and tell me something I want to know? But no, I've always been like it sounds dumb because I don't want to wait to make a difference. But like if I had money charity would be trying to reform prisons. Because the fact that we have, I was so excited and I think I'm wrong, but there was an article right before Trump got elected that was saying that they were now banning prisons for profit in America. And it was like, it technically was true, but I think, and I could be wrong about this, but I guess what's happening is they're not allowed to make any more new ones, but we still have them. And just the fact that we even have prisons for profit is just the most corrupt, astronomically ridiculous thing I've ever heard.
People's response to this is usually that right after he got elected, the stock for private prisons went up like a shit ton.
Yeah. I mean, everything we do in prisons is horrific. Just horrific. There's a comic, I should know his name, but he was on Ari Shaffir's storytelling show.
Okay.
And he talked about the first time he went to prison. It is one of the most brilliant stories I've ever heard. And something that like I saw his stand-up and I kind of want to be like, you should be doing more of that rather than your stand-up. But I know that sounds shitty, but
you shouldn't remember his name. Right.
But like, it was so good. And he just talked about how scared he was and how he was trying to understand prison culture so he didn't get stabbed. Because there's all this lingo that's like, you know, somebody's going to stab us in the courtyard. So now the whole thing was him trying to find a knife. Because everybody's like, you need to get a knife. Well, how do I get a knife? Well, you got to go to this guy. So it was this whole adventure. Right. First day in prison, trying to get a knife so he didn't get stabbed. And it ends up, he gets stabbed because he couldn't get his knife. Whatever. But that's first day of prison, scared guy. Holy and nobody shit. Talks about that these are people and they're scared. And like 80 to 95% of them are like people that aren't trying to hurt other people. And now you put them in an environment where they have to become violent and they have, and you change who they are and then you make it impossible for them to get jobs when they get out. We are just like we're just horrible people.
You see that movie 13th?
I haven't. I want to watch it.
You got to watch it. Be woke. Yeah.
Andrew's writing in. I saw him at Caroline's, meaning Artie, a few months back. He looked so sad and fucked up. Damn.
That breaks my heart.
It does. Yeah.
All right. Well, enough of that.
I was going to say, did you see what Apatow wrote though?
What's that?
So I think people were worried that he was going to get kicked off Crashing, and Apatow goes, "I don't give up on addicts."
Okay.
Nice.
Which I thought was really sweet and thoughtful.
So you should write. Again and go, it's me, and now I'm an addict.
Yeah. No, I've had my issues.
Okay, see? Maybe we'll put you on.
But for the record, for those Al-Anonics out there, you should give up on addicts sometimes. It's just a distance with love because they need to hit their bottom.
Well, he's maybe not saying already staying over his house.
Right, I mean, there's a, yeah, no.
I'll just stop. Saying.
He's saying I'll see you at work.
Yeah. No, I think there's definitely, there's a, yeah. I've been to Al-Anon meetings.
If there's an addict in your life, Al-Anon is free. A-L-A-N-O-N.
That's what you're fucking pitching me! Fucking Al-Anon! That's my McNally impression. Liz Mealy's album, it's available for pre-sale on the iTunes. Go to bit.ly/LizPresale. And of course, you can go to her website. Everything will be there. Liz Mealy, M-I-E-L-E. The Twitter account is the same, Liz Mealy.
You're okay. So good at this. Such a professional. You guys should do this like all the time.
I'm feeling it. I'm feeling a stride.
Yeah.
Now
and then kind of tripped all over that joke. And now
I couldn't have rolled my eyes harder. I was like, I thought you guys were professionals.
I was going to say that it's on pre-sale now. So if you're going to wait until it goes on sale, that's nice too, as long as you buy it. But here's the thing. When things go on pre-sale, there's a reason.
I hurt you so hard right now.
Liz is clearly trying to do something, and we can help her here. If everybody orders it on pre-sale, it all counts for the first day of sales. Yeah. And then it jumps to the top, and more people discover the people that you love. So, I mean, you're going to buy it, just buy it now while you're thinking about it, while it's on pre-sale. The same amount of money counts like double, triple because you're buying it on pre-sale.
I hurt you so hard. You have no idea. It makes such a huge difference.
I agree.
Yeah, thank you. I mean, you're cool too.
All right, I'll take it.
That's my comment. I'm like, you're the best. Keith's all right. He's all right. Like, I'm
God
in.
Damn it, I can't like this.
And you're just like in a corner, just like hearts.
Yeah,
hearts emojis. I'll text you.
Don't forget. Thank you guys very much for supporting our supporters. Take a look at keithandthegirl.com/coupons. There's always some kind of deal that will fit your life, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. Hey, all you assholes, come and listen to us.